I'm Ayala Deutsch, Executive Vice President and Deputy General Counsel at MBA Properties and the 2020 President of the International Trademark Association. I'm also the Executive Champion of the Women's Leadership Initiative and the host of today's episode of Brand and New. This is the second episode of the Women's Leader Series, a collaboration between Brand and New and the Women's Leadership Initiative. The series celebrates the unique leadership qualities of women, including their collaborative and empathetic approach to success. It brings together women leaders in diverse roles and represents various organization types in the brands and IP ecosystem. These women are at the forefront of industry trends and the conversation around how the landscape for women leaders is being shaped today. This episode is quite timely. Today is International Women's Day, held annually on March 8th. International Women's Day is a global celebration of the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. In today's episode of Brand and New, we will preview and discuss INTA's soon-to-be-published Gender Indicator Study. Last year, a diverse project team of INTA members developed a survey investigating how gender affects the experience of trademark practitioners in the workplace, with a focus on representation, career progression, and work-life integration. The survey was sent out to INTA members late last year, and respondents, including both men and women, from more than 90 jurisdictions, participated and shared their views. Given the global and diverse nature of our community, the research aims to uncover deep insight into the gender-based experiences of trademark practitioners around the world today, reveal the key indicators shaping those experiences and defining our workplace, and capture how IP professionals feel about their own experiences. While the survey suggests that progress is being made, there is still much to be done to truly improve the experiences of women in the trademark field. I'm excited now to introduce today's guests. Rachel Armstrong is a partner at Gowling WLG and based in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. Rachel serves on the Women's Leadership Initiative project team and on INTA's Brands and Innovation Committee. Shwetashree Majumdar is a managing partner of Fittis Law Chambers based in Nodia, India. Shwe serves on the INTA's DEI Council and the Enforcement Committee. She is also a past member of INTA's board. And Wiram Bolger is deputy group editor at World IP Review based in London, England. She takes the lead on all DEI-related coverage for the World IP Review. And importantly, Wiram is also a co-author of the Gender Indicator Story. Ladies, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today. First of all, happy International Women's Day to all of you. As we've noted, this study has focused on three aspects of the gender experience within our profession and industry: representation, career progression, and work-life integration. So let's begin our discussion today with representation. More than half of the survey respondents said that advancing the careers of women is a priority for their organization. And this is happening on a global scale. Muren, can you walk us through what organizations are doing to ensure gender diversity?
Thank you so much, Ayala. As you've pointed out, there's been some really insightful findings from the Gender Indicator Survey. For example, more than half, around 58% of respondents claim that their organizations have a diversity, equity, and inclusion policy or program. But, and it's a big but, fewer than 4 in 10 organizations specifically engage in recruitment efforts to promote overall gender representation in the workplace. That said, the vast majority of respondents do consider gender representation to be a consideration in the recruitment of junior staff. Indeed, there seems to be a much greater focus on gender diversity when recruiting at lower levels of an organisation. However, gender does become a lower priority at more senior levels within organisations.
Thanks so much. It's interesting. We've made progress getting women in the door, and now we need to make progress getting women up the ladder, as they say. Shwe, you have more than 20 years of experience in the workforce, and you've moved to very senior levels in the IP profession as managing partner of Fittis Law Chambers in India. What responsibility do you believe that senior leaders have in promoting gender diversity in their organizations?
Thank you, Ayala. And first of all, happy International Women's Day to all of you. I'm delighted to be part of this conversation. But taking off from what Muriel was talking about, I think as senior leaders, we need to focus on, you know, looking at whether there are broken rungs in the ladder as far as progress is concerned, because our responsibility cannot end with simply hiring more women at the entry level or even ensuring equal pay. We have to focus on the male-female ratio right from the entry level to the top to ensure that it remains constant. If we see that the ratio is changing dramatically as one moves up the career ladder, then that's a sign that there is a broken rung we need to fix. In India, for example, a lot of women end up taking mid-career breaks, and these breaks sometimes become fatal to their careers because once they take a break, they find it incredibly hard to get back. So in our firm, for example, we address the issue of why breaks become necessary. It's invariably because women, whether we like it or not, the societal structure is such that women bear a lion's share of domestic responsibility. Now, we can't change their domestic situation, so we addressed it by permitting work from home well before the pandemic. We created a creche or a playroom in the office so women could bring young children to work if on a particular day they needed to come in but didn't have help at home. We even built a gym in the office because women complained that they didn't have enough personal time to be able to go and work out because, you know, you also need to make sure that your mental health is taken care of. So we built a gym in the office. Ultimately, we also offered the services of a therapist. The office would comp up to 4 sessions with a therapist. And in India, what we've realized is that affirmative action cannot stop with gender alone because your intervention has to be intersectional. For an organization to be truly diverse, it has to be a safe space, not just for women, but perhaps even minorities within women. In India, that would mean caste minorities, sexual minorities. And we realized that, you know, sometimes it's something so simple. You can be guilty of rewarding privilege by simply insisting that a candidate be from a top-tier law school with a certain grade point average, certain co-curricular credentials. And what you end up doing is you exclude a large number of minority candidates who may not have had the same privileges when it came to their legal education. So we even overhauled our hiring policies to be able to welcome a more diverse pool of talent in the firm and found that to be a great game changer.
Yeah. I mean, you've just shared so much valuable feedback. It's interesting what you said about not realizing what certain requirements will do with respect to diverse candidate pools. A couple of years ago, I read a statistic that said over 70% of federal clerkships in the United States were held by white men. And so when looking at candidates, if you inserted that federal clerkship preference, you were incorporating a whole bunch of bias without even realizing you were. And so it's really interesting. Rachel, Shwe just gave us some insight into India. You're originally from the UK. You've worked in both the government and the private sector in the United Arab Emirates. With this perspective, how are women represented in the IP profession in the UAE? And how has that evolved and how is that evolving over time?
Hello, everyone. And I just want to mirror the happy International Women's Day to everyone listening and to my fellow ladies on the call. It's lovely to be here and be part of this conversation. It's very interesting coming from the UK and working here. I've been here 10 years now. And I think very much the perception is women perhaps might not be treated as equally, might not be the same sort of ladder of opportunity in the UAE. And I think particularly when it comes to Dubai, where I am based, I found that to be the complete opposite. So I spend quite a lot of my time really sort of championing the opportunities that I've had in the UAE throughout my career. And I think that's come from a combination of things. One is sort of very much the support, and I know we'll come on perhaps later to speak about sort of mentorship and allyship. But, you know, having the support of colleagues around you. But the other thing which I think Dubai specifically has done, where I hasten to say I think perhaps the UK, based on my experience, is lacking, is it's such an agile and fast-paced society that it really enables very quick change. So, for example, when the pandemic hit here, we could move very quickly to remote working. It was very well set up for that. And there was that real kind of entrepreneurial spirit that I think underpins the culture here, where everyone's happy to adapt very quickly to what needs to be done. And really, I'm seeing in the UK and other Western jurisdictions, perhaps now a little bit more of a drawback on those pre-COVID actions, which isn't reflective of the market here. There's very much still a championing of flexibility, flex up, flex down, do what you need to do to get the job done. And I'm seeing more perhaps in sort of UK cultures, sort of recall to work and more of those sort of need to be there for a water cooler moment, so to speak. And it, I find it a very interesting dynamic that I'm in a part of the world where the perception is perhaps women wouldn't be as championed. And my experience is very different. And I think I, you know, speak relatively comfortably for the IP female profession in the country to say it's a really sort of well-established group of women, very supportive. And yeah, as I said, that comes from allyship, both female and male, across government and the private sector.
You know, it's interesting what you say about really embracing and adapting to change, both from a country level and a cultural level, but also within our organizations. And I find with a lot of DEI initiatives, there's verbal acceptance of the concept, but it's a little harder to get the actual nuts and bolts of the machinery to crank differently. So that's an interesting perspective. Well, we talked a little bit about representation, getting women in the door, but all of you have kind of alluded to the future rungs on the ladder and how we can position women for advancement. So let's talk about career progression, which the study also looked into. There's an idea of this broken pipeline for women in leadership or missing rungs on the ladder. And this refers to women who drop out of leadership positions or are not moving up in their careers at the same rates as men, notwithstanding where the genders were at an entry level. Miran, what does this survey findings reveal in terms of what is hindering female IP practitioners from advancement to these leadership positions?
We've already touched on the issue of bias and the challenges that can present. And one finding from our survey is that bias, whether it's overt or unconscious, it's still a major barrier. It's notable that a number of respondents refer to the issue of gender bias in hiring in their organisation. This was an open response question. It's interesting that quite a few respondents raised this issue of bias without being prompted. To give you an example, one respondent said, "The biggest barrier facing women in terms of career progression is the global perception that men are more valuable than women in the workplace." Another said, "The biggest barrier facing women are assumptions that women with children are not ambitious. Conversely, there are assumptions that women without children are free to take on an unlimited amount of work." I think another respondent put it best, "No doubt there is still discrimination in many organisations based on gender." Additionally, 3/4 of female respondents believe there is still a trade-off between raising a family and career success. Nearly 4 in 10 of female respondents also indicated that they had witnessed women treated negatively for being assertive in the past 3 years, with 28% personally experiencing this. And then finally, just under half, or around 44% of female respondents, also indicated that they had witnessed women being accorded less respect than men, while slightly more than 30% had personally experienced this.
Yeah, I mean, Miran, you just touched on so many recurring themes of what women confront in the workplace, and including in IP, that includes the intersection with work home responsibilities and work responsibilities and the perceptions around that, which we'll talk about a little more in a moment. And then the negative treatment for being, quote, assertive, which is, you know, part of what has been called for women the double bind, which is, if you're not assertive enough, then you're weak in comparison to men. And if you're too assertive, then you're unpleasant. And then you find yourself literally not being able to win. I mean, it's interesting to hear that the survey results continue to validate those perceptions. Shui and Rachel, keeping in mind what Mirren has just shared with us, can you reflect a little on your own journeys to the leadership positions you currently hold? What advice do you have for young women who are entering the IP profession today and want to overcome this broken pipeline?
Up to about the age of 30, I would say I was a strong advocate of everything's equal. I see no disparity. I'm paid equally to my male colleagues. I'm offered the same opportunities. And really, when things started to change for me and I really saw a difference was around sort of 30, which just happened to coincide when I had my first child. I didn't take much time off work for that sort of period, but also it really sort of shocked me into a different sort of work-life balance. And the sort of, it's really then and the years preceding that I've really become a big advocate in this area and seeing sort of those challenges. For me, I think I wouldn't necessarily recommend my experience, which was head down, graft, work harder than everyone around you, try and do it all, and make it look like you're achieving everything. That didn't, you know, for me personally led to quite a serious burnout. I've learned a huge amount from that and now really try and advocate for people to take a different path. I think the thing that I recognize now is, and the thing I would always say to those coming through and managers is, career, you know, your career is a very long time, hopefully, and really sort of seeing your career in phases, for me, I found very helpful both for myself and those that I manage. And, you know, saying to people, we want to support you in this long career. We recognize that things are going to happen in your life. For me, it was, you know, having children, but for others, it may be caring responsibilities. It could be a whole host of things. And seeing that is a phase and saying there might be points in your career where you need to flex up, you need to flex down, and that's absolutely fine. And the organization you're working within needs to have the right policies, the right support network to really support you in doing that and that journey, because that's really A, how you build that sort of colleague and workplace culture and support and loyalty, but also it creates a sort of happier, healthier workforce and one we all hopefully want to be part of. And I think that for me is what I say to people now. And I have a lot of, you know, people in the team that will say, well, how have you managed it? And I'll say, well, don't go down the path I went to. Please learn from my experience. But, you know, here are some tools. You know, don't be afraid. You don't need to push forward always. You know, it might be when you have young children, for example, and I speak to this as, you know, this is what I know about, is, you know, then that might be a time where you don't push forward at quite the same rate in your career, but that's absolutely fine because you've got hopefully years ahead of you, and your personal circumstances will change. You will have a bit more flexibility potentially in the future, and that's okay. See it as a journey. Yes, you can get to partner at a certain age, and that can look very impressive on a CV, but I assure you it's not worth the burnout and all the recovery to get there. And it's just as rewarding, I'm sure, to do it a few years later, you know, in a really supportive and healthy way.
Yeah. Shui, what about your perspective on the broken pipeline, as it were, and in particular, again, your previous comments were so valuable, speaking from a position of leadership. What advice do you have for leaders in the IP field who want to help fix this broken pipeline?
I was reflecting on what Rachel was talking about, and it's actually uncanny how similar both our journeys are. And I think if I could talk to my 30-year-old self, possibly today, I would tell her to dial down the frenzy. And I think I harbored from the imposter syndrome so much. I too worked impossible hours. I was an absentee mother on a large number of days. I had no boundaries and I tried to do everything at once. And that was expected of me, to be honest. And it was really funny how a very dear inter friend once gave me a box of post-it notes, which I still have on my table, which says, stop me before I volunteer again. And that pretty much summed up my life, right? I don't think I'd heard the word work, you know, the phrase work-life balance in those days. And the sad part was, because I'm a litigator, no matter how hard I worked, I would often get slotted into those pejorative boxes like too ambitious, aggressive, and so on. You know, and I got where I did with precious little professional mentoring without a mindful organizational support structure backing me. And consequently, in my case too, my mental health was in shambles. And today, I think I like to say that this is Shwe 2.0. And a lot of my own experiences have shaped how I view my role as a mentor and leader today. I like to think of myself as a more mindful leader, a more collaborative and empathetic colleague. And my only advice to younger people who are looking to climb up, pretty much like Rachel, is to say that, you know, you don't need to mimic anyone else. Be your authentic self. You know, be a collaborative colleague. Have a spine. Stick up for yourself and others. Demand what is due to you. And, you know, whether someone is making space for you or not, you have to appreciate that, you know, whether you have to do it yourself, there is always space for everyone. So if you're getting invisibilized, call it out. But don't be insecure about the fact that you're not getting everything all at once. Don't waste your time appeasing everyone. And I think as far as leaders are concerned, you know, I've received that recurrent piece of advice in India from senior women in the profession that women must work twice as hard as men in order to be recognized. And this is probably one of the first patriarchal constructs that I address with women I mentor. Men are not the benchmark. The first step to address any sustained initiative, if you want to start a sustained initiative to address gender imbalance, then you have to tackle these psychological barriers. We need to mentor, we need to counsel, we need to coach, do whatever we need to do to help women learn to first value themselves and then to learn the wonderfully empowering skill of setting boundaries. So, you know, there's this piece I do that I do, for, you know, like a sort of mentoring talk that I do. I've done it in some client offices. I've done it with women in STEM, and I call it Occupying Spaces. And the underlying theme of this talk that I do is to remind women that if you want to occupy a certain chair or title or position, then you need to start with occupying physical spaces. You know, you should have the confidence, for example, you want the confidence to be able to call out pejorative verbiage. Right? Before you do that, what you do is you walk into a room which is full of men. Even if you're feeling intimidated, go claim your seat at the table. So sometimes it's the physical act of occupying spaces which helps the psychological journey. And in the workplace, you know, as far as leaders are concerned, we need to make sure that workspaces are safe places for women. We need to make sure that women will not be penalized for standing up to a bully. We need to make sure that there's zero tolerance for harassment of any sort. So once we help create these kind of workplaces, then we'll go beyond the tokenism of simply hiring women. And finally, coming to the role of men, I think, and I'm sure all of you will agree with me that allyship is something that we don't give enough credit for. My best friend at work is male, and his ability to hold space for women and how he champions women is something I deeply admire. So some men may need guidance and conversation to overcome any mental baggage that they have, any fear and apathy that they carry. Others slip into the role of allies more willingly. We need to celebrate those men. We need to decry toxic masculinity. And for example, women in offices I've seen, most of the time when there is any non-fee earning work, like scheduling a meeting or taking meeting notes or something like that, it's always the women who volunteer. So the moment I see women volunteering, I call it out and I say, hey, you know, this doesn't have to be a gendered responsibility. So, you know, the moment you call that out, then what happens is, you know, there'll be a male hand going up in the room saying, I'll do it this time or something like that. So sometimes you need to call it out. You need to remind teams that all of these non-fee earning responsibilities need not be gendered, right? Or sometimes you can even include some of this in evaluation. Right? So people step up more for each other.
Yeah, I've done the same. And I do think it's interesting. There's so many threads that feed into this. The perspective of women themselves in terms of how they want to advance what senior women leaders can do, the allyship of men, what organizations can do. It really is everybody working toward this. It's funny, a friend of mine texted me over the weekend a t-shirt that said, women who want to be as good as men lack ambition. I thought that was good for International Women's Day. Well, I do want to touch upon the final topic, which is a very important one. And it's not more important than representation and career progression, but it is critical and it can be overlooked. It's much debated. And that is work-life integration. So in the survey, only 60% of respondents and only 54% of female respondents said they have sufficient time to commit to a healthy lifestyle. It's interesting, when we introduced the women's leadership, I advocated for referring to work-life integration rather than work-life balance. It's something I stole from someone. I used to hear the phrase work-life balance, and it struck me as positioning yourself for failure because it seemed impossible, even if you could attain it, to maintain it. As I say to some people, how long can you stand on one foot? At some point, balance doesn't work. But integration, I heard this someone speak on this, and that really resonated with me because I'm a compulsive list maker, and I used to make a list for my work stuff and a list for my life stuff. And miraculously enough, what always fell off the grid was all the personal stuff. The work stuff always got done. And then after I heard someone speak on work-life integration, it occurred to me, there's only one of me. Why are there two lists? That doesn't work. And so it really was about bringing together all of me, the me I bring to work, the me I have in my personal life, the me that has to have good physical and mental well-being. Much harder, easier to say than to do, but at least that's a starting point. We're looking at work-life integration for women. So Marin, what did the survey reveal in terms of why so many of us still are not finding the time to focus on our well-being?
It's the billion-dollar question. One thing that did emerge from the survey was there is this sense that to some degree there is a lip service being paid to work-life integration in many organizations. When responding to the questions, do the benefits provided by your organization support a healthy work-life balance? One respondent answered, there exists lots of lip service. So for example, you might be told, here's a gym membership, but you won't have time to go to the gym if you're keeping up with your workload. Another example this particular respondent gave was an organization may offer healthy meals for dinner, but only if you're working a 14-hour day. There may be an in-house psychologist to encourage better work practices, but then these recommendations contradict the partner's own working practices. Another respondent mentioned the focus on FaceTime in promotional decisions is hurting work-life balance and stressed how their own work-life integration had improved since moving to a target-driven compensation structure. So they said, being target-driven rather than being driven by time worked is a huge benefit in a healthy work-life balance. So undoubtedly, there's definitely a big question mark over how a healthy work-life integration can be achieved in trademark law today.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me. I'm 35 years out of law school, and it's amazing to me how these themes are still underlying everything. I mean, the one thing that I'm hopeful about, and Rachel alluded to this in terms of her experience in Dubai, is that we're really in a period of fundamental sea changes in working generally through technology, through remote work. And I'm hoping that generationally, this recognition for flexibility, for work-life integration, and some time for self-care is something that is shared by younger people of all genders. And we're really going to try and push this forward. This clearly still difficult challenge we all face. I don't know, Shui or Rachel, do you want to give your own experience here?
I'm happy to jump in over the shouting of my small child.
There you go.
Half time, so apologies for that. It's an exciting part of the day, but probably the best reflection of the work-life integration when you're sort of trying to do two things at the same time. But I think what I found sort of really interesting is, and I this is from true IP lawyer style, I'm going to borrow from an article I read about the four Fs, which are flexibility, family, finance, and freedom. And what I'd read about these sort of four Fs in an article were that each of these will take priority at sort of different points of your life. And I think it really speaks to the work-life integration, where the two are happening side by side. And there's really no getting away from that. So it's really recognizing that at different points, different things will take priority. And I fully agree, you know, if something is happening at work that's critical, that is where you are going to be. And equally, something happens at school and you go to the pickup and you sort that out. So it's really sort of having that flexibility. And, you know, I think what I've seen in this market particularly is, you know, and we go back to allyship and sponsorship, but really having those supporters that recognize that flexibility, you yourself can have that approach, but it is imperative that those around you, both your team, those more senior, those more junior than yourself, your clients, that there really is a sort of understanding that you are managing lots of things or spinning lots of plates, and you know that you will prioritize all these elements of your life. And Ayala, I completely agree with you. I had to merge my lists as well, because I had two sides of the page, and it really occurred to me that one was getting done, the other wasn't. And then those personal things become very urgent. They create quite a lot of stress, and you always feel like you're catching up and chasing your tail. So merging the two, I think is very important. It's a concept I think I've heard more and more of, and I think it's a really positive one.
So I'm glad you talked about integration, Ayala, because I've always struggled with the word balance, because to me, balance is, you know, envisages 50% to work and 50% to life. And that doesn't really work because both need 100%. So I guess, like you, I'm obsessive about my to-do lists as well. So my personal mantra is prioritizing. So I always say this, that if there's a fire at work, that's where you'll find me holding the fire extinguisher, and likewise at home. So if you have the ability to prioritize, make to-do lists and set boundaries, I wish it came naturally to women, but women don't set boundaries, including jealously guarding weekends and downtime. All of this is helpful in achieving this elusive balance. That's kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, I agree. I always tell women in particular to give themselves the grace they so often give others. I think women are so understanding of the colleagues or the teams they manage, and typically far less understanding of themselves. So we all need to practice what we preach. I'd like to close with some quick fire questions for everyone. First of all, what do you think is the biggest misunderstanding about what you do professionally? Maybe we'll start with you. You have a particularly unique IP role. What do you think is the biggest misunderstanding about what you do professionally?
I think frequent misunderstanding is that my job is somehow not that demanding because I work remotely or I work sometimes in a hybrid pattern, and therefore it's easy to get chores or mum duties or life admin done.
Yeah. Shui, what about you?
That IP litigation is luxury litigation. That unlike real stuff like criminal law, constitutional law, and so on. And so, you know, non-IP practitioners, you know, perceive it as a soft law and think that we don't really need very advanced skill sets.
Yeah, I suffered from that early in my career. Rachel, what about you?
I think the main one that comes up for me is that being a partner means that all I do is take long lunches.
and cash the checks.
Working all day. That's one I get quite a lot.
What is a new skill you would like to learn and why? Shui, why don't we start with you?
I have to confess that I cannot swim. It's a life skill that I sadly lack. I need to overcome my fear of water and crack this one.
Definitely. And you'll find it enjoyable when you do, I think. Weiren, what about you?
At the moment, I'd love to learn more about interior design and the art of organisation and decluttering, because our house renovation is underway and there's lots of DIY still to be done.
Yeah. Decluttering. It's such an attractive thing. Rachel, what about you?
I'm going to go with effective boundary setting because it is the biggest challenge of my life. I haven't cracked it yet, but I try every day. So yeah, I think that's going to be a lifelong one for me. And if I crack it, I'll let you know.
Absolutely. Share the inside knowledge. Well, finally, Rachel, we'll go to you first with this last question. What is your favorite word and why?
So I've commandeered this word from my favorite podcast, and it's perseverance, which is the combination of perseverance and resilience, because I think those are two things I've developed, and they're two things that I think they're sort of key skills for people that want to have a sort of long and successful career. Is you do become more resilient, but do persevere.
I love it. I'm gonna borrow it. Weiren, what about you? What's your favorite word and why?
I think it's idyllic because I think it's quite a musical word. And for me, it conjures up happy, peaceful, sun-soaked images where you can completely switch off.
I love it. Sounds good on a gray, rainy day like this. Sweet, what is your favorite word and why?
Mindfulness. It's something I've been trying to practice. It really helps keep me centered. It's helping me deal with all the fretting and the panicking and the reacting to situations. Recommended highly.
Those are great words, and they all, I think, operate together. Thank you all for joining me and for adding your unique perspective and insight into what has been a very candid and very enjoyable conversation. And Myrn, we can look forward to reading the report when it comes out, but until then, happy International Women's Day to all of you and to our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.